What's going on, everybody? Welcome into episode 24 of Lobbing Scorchers. This is Ari Lilienwall. I got producer Noah here with me. Noah, say what's up to the people.
What's up, people? Man, what a deja vu, Ari.
Yeah, you know, I feel like we've been a bit of a broken record on this podcast since last year, basically. And unfortunately, I think it might be a similar theme this week, Noah. But we've got a good show for you nonetheless. I'm feeling better on our last episode. I still had the flu, so mm-hmm. I don't have that anymore.
Thank God.
So that's a positive. I feel back to 100%. We're going to be keeping with our same routine this week. We're going to be reacting to the latest Seattle Sounders game, which was a 1-1 draw at home against the Colorado Rapids. But, you know, this might be the last time that we lead the show with the Seattle Sounders for a little while. I toyed with this policy last season a little bit. I think we were joking around about it. But I think I might bump them to the back of the show until they score multiple goals in an MLS game.
How about a goal from the run of play?
Yeah, or that. But no, I want to see two goals.
Yeah.
In an MLS game. I don't really care if it's from the run of play or if they're penalties or set pieces or whatever. I just want to see multiple goals in an MLS game. And anytime they give us that, we'll lead the show with them all day. But we're gonna lead with them again this week because this game against Colorado was actually reasonably eventful, even like for a 1-1 draw. I think a lot happened, at least. So I'm excited to talk about it, even though the result was pretty disastrous, to be honest, how that panned out at the end. And then we're gonna jump into we're gonna hop around the league a little bit, do some winners and losers, talk about some of the other results that took place in MLS match day 5, and then I think we had a couple other news items in there maybe, and then we're gonna get out of here. But let's get into this Sounders game, Noah. We got to talk about it. 1-1 against Colorado. And I think the unfortunate thing is that this game actually started off pretty well. It was a game where, given the struggles that this team has had on offense to start the season, dating back to last season, an early goal was going to be crucial, I thought, you know, just to get the vibes right. I did not like the idea of any sort of game here where you're going into the second half with it 0-0 or anything like that. I think you had to get on the board early. And to their credit, they did that. 11th minute, I believe. It was in the opening 15 minutes. Raul Ruiz Diaz and Leo Chu had a nice little interplay sequence. And Raul winds up hitting the ball off Keegan Rosenberry's hand in the penalty area for a handball. Well won, well earned penalty. No, I know you were calling them PK merchants or whatever as soon as it happened, but I'm not even going to caveat like that. You know, it was an earned pen. Raul had a nice finish with the Panenka on that 1-0 lead, and at that point, you know, it felt like that was what they needed to reset the vibes a little bit. Like they just needed that early goal, however they could get it, and they got it. And when you score an early goal like that, it is very helpful to the cause typically, because that can open an opponent up. A team that comes to Seattle like Austin FC did in the previous game and tries to bunker the entire game, which they had success doing, you can't really do that when you go down a goal. So, you know, I had hope. I thought that maybe that was the goal they needed to get things going, get this offense kicked into gear. Unfortunately, that turned out not to be the case. I mean, this game really got chalked on the Josh Atencio red card.
Yeah, soft.
Which was in the it was like the 60th minute or something. Mm-hmm. There's too much time.
I think he got his first yellow in like the 48th or something, and then he got sent off.
He got sent off about 10 minutes later.
Yeah,
and I mean, there was a lot of talk about the call itself. I thought the weird thing about that call was how, and a lot of people pointed this out, but how the referee let play go for a full minute on the clock after the foul in question occurred. And then Josh got the second yellow like retroactively after play had stopped a minute later. I did think that was weird. That's usually if there's a yellow card foul in that situation, they're going to stop play and give the card right there. Especially, you know, especially if it's on a second yellow where the guy's getting sent off. It's kind of weird to have him playing for a full minute after an offense that was ostensibly bad enough for him to get ejected.
Yeah.
But I
know that one of the I saw on Twitter, so take it with a grain of salt, but the guidance that the handbooks give for officials is that if there is a play that, you know, potentially would result in a red card concerning like serious conduct with, you know, endangering a player, which was what the second yellow was for, apparently. Because, I mean, he did come in late on the second one. I think we could both agree that second foul was a yellow, but the first one was, it was a little bit soft in terms of yellow. So it was weird that they just pulled that out like 35 minutes after it happened.
It was weird. I personally, I don't know. Everyone's got their own take on it. I personally didn't have an issue with the challenge itself getting a yellow. And I just think it's a situation where, you know, when you're on, when you know you're already on a yellow and you go into a challenge like that, you're immediately susceptible right there. It's 50-50 whether you're going to get sent off or not. And that's just, you're playing with fire. That's not a game that you should be playing. And so Josh made a mistake right there. And it's unfortunate because, I mean, he's been one of the best players on the team to this point in the season. He was playing well in this game. And in a one goal game with that much time left on the clock, it's just an ill-advised challenge. He shouldn't have gone into that challenge. He gets sent off. And at that point, Seattle just has so much time to protect this one goal lead. And they've been having trouble scoring with 11 guys on the field. So trying to score the second goal with 10 guys, that's probably not going to happen. You basically are just hoping and praying that you can absorb whatever pressure that comes at you and see out the game at 1-0. But Seattle got really lucky to not lose this game, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
Jackson Reagan gave up a penalty kick not all that much longer after Josh got sent off. And Andy Thomas, shout out Andy Thomas. That was it was not a good penalty by Georgi Mihailovic, but you got to give credit to the backup goalkeeper for stuffing that one. He read that perfectly, made a good save, and that kind of put a boost into the building. The crowd was hype after Andy Thomas made that save. He's been playing pretty well. People were pointing out his distribution in this game wasn't that good, and I would agree with that. But you know, when you save a penalty kick, those are game changing plays that an MLS starting goalkeeper has got to make, and he made that play. So they were actually in line to still see out the 1-0. But unfortunately, in the 88th minute, Danny Leyva, who was subbed on, gives up a free kick just outside the box. Georgi Mihailovic lines it up. He hits it pretty dead eye. Andy Thomas actually saved it.
A great save.
Yeah, he called it one of the best saves of his life, which honestly, like, I don't doubt it. Like, yeah. it was a pretty amazing save.
He was on.
But unfortunately, it fell right to former LA Galaxy legend, Kevin Cabral, and he had a pretty easy rebound finish.
And then shushed ECS.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah.
That's a pretty sick move by Kevin Cabral. He was not well-marked on that play. Like, that goal actually, that rebound could have been prevented.
That was some bad defending.
Yeah, that was...
It was a pretty poorly defended game, it felt like, but that was just kind of awful.
It was backbreaking, man, because they were actually pretty close to pulling that off with 10 men. But, you know, it's kind of a recurring theme that we've talked about a lot over the last calendar year or so, which is that when you can't score goals, your margin of error becomes like non-existent. And one little lapse or one little mistake like that, and you're dropping points at home again. And it's just happened too many times over the last year. You know, if you're able to get multiple goals in this game, if you hang two or three on them at home against an inferior opponent, you're not in a situation where one goal causes you to drop those points. So It's just unfortunate that we have to have the same conversations on a weekly basis. But until this offense gets kicked into gear, like, that's probably how it's going to keep going, man. Like, I hate to say that, but I've seen this movie a few too many times, dating back to last season and so far this season. They ran the 4-4-2 again, I get the thought behind it, and you know,
I gotta ask, why do you get the thought though? What is the thought?
I mean, you're trying to get Raul and Jordan on the field at the same time, and with where they're at with personnel and the injuries, it's theoretically a way to get most of your best, most trusted players all together on the field at the same time. And also, you know, I'm not at training every day anymore, so I don't know how it looks in training. I would assume that they're having some degree of success with it in training if they keep running it. Or maybe maybe the coaches feel like their hands are just tied and they have to run it regardless of how it looks in training. I don't know. But either way, I don't disagree that the early returns from it have not exactly been encouraging. It's nice to see a new tactical wrinkle, I guess. I think it's good that Raul is starting these games. He's been playing well. He was buzzing around in this game. He's trying to play his ass off right now.
He's playing for a contract, man. Yeah, I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
And, I think he sees the writing on the wall. I mean, I don't blame him.
And I don't know about the way he was used in this game. He was playing hard and he was buzzing around. He was active. He was getting a fair amount of touches, but it felt like he was getting the ball too deep. You know, Rui Diaz is a player that you needed to be getting engaged and on the ball higher up the field, not necessarily dropping back and playing. It was almost like, would you agree? It almost felt like he was playing as a 10 at times.
Yeah, like, it was the whole formation in the front I found was really weird. And granted, like the angle that I had was I'm basically like on the corner, but like you'd see like Leo Chu would float inside to the opposite side as well. I almost felt like they realized that left side is such a black hole that they're like, we want such a fluid attack to where like our wingers can become nines and our nines can become tens and our tens can become defensive midfielders. It was, maybe that's not what they meant to do. Maybe Brian was like, go out there and be fluid. But I agree with you. I saw that as well. Like he would be playing as a 10 and then he'd be playing as a target nine within like the same 15 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it was interesting to watch, but it definitely, I mean, it didn't result in any sustained sort of offense that felt like different or like a new leaf had been turned or anything like that.
I don't think giving more freedom to Leo Chu is necessarily going to solve your attacking woes there personally.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know what to say about this offense at this point other than pretty much standing by what I've been saying, which is that, you know, me personally, given what the situation is with personnel, I would like to see some Paul Rothrock. I would like to see some Cody Baker.
He played really well.
And yeah, he was out there cooking. That's what I'm saying. Like maybe see what he can do from the start. But it doesn't seem like the coaches are looking at it the same way. I think the way that they seem to be looking at it is that, you know, they have the players that they trust the most based on what they see in training and the players that are paid the most to be difference makers. And they're going to try and ride those guys and let them figure it out, which, you know, if they think that's the right approach, I'm not a coach. I can't really argue with it. As a fan, I would enjoy the intrigue of giving younger players, different players, a chance to try it out. But it doesn't seem like we're going to get that. So, yeah, aside from that, you really, once again, just have to get Albert Rusnak healthy, get João Paulo healthy. That's probably the most important thing right now.
I think Yamar as well.
Yamar, but I mean, I still... Because
Reagan's
like,
playing out of position, and he looks lost. And Mark Kastner, Sounder at Heart, shout out, he wrote about the last match, and one of the things that I really loved about his article that I noticed was he looked super out of position and lost in the last game, which is not particularly how he plays. Like, he commands that back line with Yamar really well, and having to play out of position is just another wrinkle into, like, basically the only good part of your team.
It's a good point. I still feel like in general, I don't really see the defense as the problem. They've had two home games, one against Austin FC, one against Colorado. They've given up one goal. They got lucky in the Colorado game to not give up more goals. Colorado cooked on some XG a little bit and they missed a penalty kick.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was the best game defensively. I think it's a good point about Jackson Reagan playing out of position, and he obviously didn't have his best game. He gave up the penalty.
Yep.
But like, you can't rely on your defense to have a clean sheet every single game, week in, week out. That's just not realistic. You got to be able to score. They haven't been able to do that so far this season. Two goals on the season through three games, if we're taking the Philly game out of it, both penalties. Only team in the league that hasn't scored from open play. That's not going to cut it, not if you're planning on contending for anything. So I think it's just about grinding through this stretch right now where, you know, you're down a lot of guys, and I think that's got to be pointed out. No one likes to hear about it, but I do think there's an extent to which when you're down Yamar, JP, Albert Rusnak, Nathan's been out. Who am I missing?
Reed Baker Whiting,
RBW,
everyone. I've been out.
Half the squad is injured.
It's bad.
A lot of the most important players. So,
and the MLS season is forgiving. Like, I think it's really hard.
That's the upshot. That's the upshot.
Like I've been super pessimistic about this club, and especially with the personnel and the lineups and all of this. And I think maybe it's because I am really just like needing something new, needing a new look from the club. But in reality, like, it doesn't. These first eight games, if you can pull out some kind of points, you'll be fine if you can perform the rest of the season.
Pedro de la Vega is the one that I was missing, and that's...
Yes, yeah.
That's a big one. He's still out for six more weeks, so... not great. San Jose Earthquakes up next, which they're 0-4-0, one of two winless teams in MLS, or like teams that have lost every game, along with the New England Revolution, somewhat surprisingly. So they're one of the worst teams in the league right now. But, you know, I was doing my hit on KJR with my buddy Jackson Fels today, and I was telling him, like, no matter what the Quakes record is, I never trust a game against the Quakes.
Never.
The Quakes were a bogey team for years. I feel like that narrative has actually subsided a little bit in the last couple years, and there's been a few games where Seattle's gotten the better of them. But when I first started on the beat, there was a long time where I would almost like write off Quakes games as an L, even if it was in Seattle, because those were the Wando years.
Yeah.
And Wando would just bam on them every single game. And it was literally, people would ask Ziggy about that and be like, why are the Quakes the bogey team? They're not very good.
Yeah.
And he would be like, I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
In not those words, but
in recent years, just as a let you know, the Earthquakes haven't lost to Seattle in their last five matches. They had four wins and one draw.
See, yeah. I'm telling you, man. And the fact that they're 0-4-0, that just makes them desperate. That makes them more dangerous.
They haven't won a game in 10 matches.
The Sounders
love to lose a game like this. What are we talking about, guys? What are we talking about?
With Seattle's offense in the state that it is right now, I would be shocked if they won this game, because the Quakes, I mean, they're like getting into that territory where it's like your season can get away from you real early. If you go to 0-5-0, like that's, you know, as tough as a start as Seattle has had, they've at least pulled 2 points. You know, the Quakes have 0 points.
Zero.
So they're going to come out
minus six GD
with
too.
Their hair on fire. They're going to be coming at Seattle. I don't really know what their health situation is, but like they have some guys. That Christian Espinoza was looking like one of the better attacking players in the league for a long stretches of really since he's gotten here. He's had some dominant stretches. Jeremy Obobese is a good striker. He's scored on Seattle a couple times dating back to his days with the Portland Timbers. So basically it's all a long way of saying, I mean, it might sound crazy against a 0-4-0 team, but like you got to just like scratch and claw for a 0-0 or a 1-1 here, because I don't really know how much I trust their ability to score multiple goals in a game right now. Not very much.
Nope.
And you're playing against a desperate opponent, so I don't know.
Without Atencio as well.
Yeah, with Josh Atencio suspended and a lot of guys still injured. Hopefully Albert Rusnak will be back for this game. That was one positive of the Rapids game. Yeah. It was good to see Rusnak back on the field. I didn't think he made, he didn't really have much time to make as much of an impact as he can normally make at full strength for a full game. But if you can get him back out there, that would help. I don't know what's going on with JP. I would imagine he's out for this game. Steph Fry might be back, which I think is a boost to an extent, although Andy Thomas has been fine.
Yeah, so. I was going to say, do you actually play Fry over Andy after last game?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I still do. Andy's done well. Like, you got to give him his credit. But
Fry doesn't save that
still,
pen.
I know, a lot of people were saying that. I mean, it...
And maybe, I don't think he not, makes but that it was other not, save
it
either.
It was not a well taken pen by Georgi Mihailovic. So not to take away from Andy Thomas, but it's not like you had to be like some crazy god tier buffoon goalkeeper to save that pen. But I mean, Steph Fry is the GK1 on this team still in my eyes. I would start him. And I think they will if he's healthy. But like, from what I can gather, you probably still got no JP for this game. And we'll see what Rusnak's availability is like. But either way, with no Atencio and with an offense that's stuck in neutral, I think you're pretty happy to take a point home if you can here.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know. It's like going against the 0-4-0 Quakes, like you should feel like you can win that game, but like, you know, I'm just kind of at the point where until I see them score multiple goals in a game in 2024, I'm definitely not going to predict that it's going to happen. I'm not going to predict something that I have no evidence to support.
Yeah,
so you know, prove me wrong. Score twice in this game.
Last game I tried to have them prove me wrong. I wagered on Twitter. I said, listen,
oh yeah,
if the Sounders can score multiple goals in this game, at more than one, basically just more than one, I don't care, you could do two penalties, that's fine, I'll get a Sammy Sounder tattoo. They did not follow through on that, unfortunately.
I was rooting for you to have to get the tat.
Yeah,
so that is unfortunate.
Well, you know,
well, let's keep it pushing here. I think that's about enough on that game, in the Quakes game. I wish I had more by ways of solutions, you know, but I don't know.
It seems like it's just a waiting game. We're in a holding pattern of injuries. I don't think anyone knows what to do at this point. It's just like, let's see if we can kickstart this thing in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
in 3 weeks. Who knows?
I mean, it might take until Pedro de la Vega gets back, and you know, even when he does get back, we have no data really to tell whether that signing is going to be a hit or not. You know, I thought he looked really good in the LAFC game and for parts of the Austin game. And, you know, he scored a penalty kick. But I think if I had to peg the thing that I'm most disappointed about, it's that injury, because that was really like the biggest source of intrigue from last season to this season.
Yeah.
Was to see if there could be a galvanizing effect on this offense through that signing. And I feel robbed.
We were robbed.
We've been robbed of the opportunity to see that for another 6 weeks. So it's going to be a grind. But we'll be back here next week reacting to whatever might happen. We'll see if we lead the show with it. Score multiple goals and we're gonna be cooking and leading with the Seattle Sounders. All right. Let's jump around the league now. Does that sound good?
I'm ready.
I feel like this winners and losers format that we've been doing has worked pretty well, because you know it allows us to riff on other goings on around the league, kind of highlight the best and most exciting games that took place around the league, and some of the funny results too. My first winner, Chicago Fire SC. Yeah. Did you see this?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
This was probably the craziest game of the season so far. And what I loved about this is that the Chicago Fire flipped the script, man. The Chicago Fire in the last few years have developed something of a reputation as the team that they passionately love giving away leads.
Correct.
If it's tied and you need a win, they'll give it to you. If they're ahead and you're trying to get a draw, they're happy to oblige. It's what the Chicago Fire do.
Chicago, nice.
It's like a lot of teams think that they choke in the 90th minute the most. No one holds a candle to what I've witnessed from the Chicago Fire the last few years in terms of that. And they were right back at it this season. Like they had a couple games to start the year where it was just like they were like ahead late in the game. Boom, it's tied. It's tied late in the game. Boom, they lose. So it was fascinating to see them be down 3-1, I believe, to CF Montreal at home. And not only did they come back and tie it, but they got the craziest game-winning goal I think I've ever seen. So it was tied 3-3, and it was like the 98th minute.
Well, no, what's even crazier, if you go back before that, they were down two goals to tie it in the 90th minute.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. I think they got an 84th minute PK.
Yeah.
And then they tied it.
I'm pulling up the game. Let's see.
In stoppage.
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There we go. Yeah. 84th minute pen, 90 plus 5 minute equalizer.
And then, so just to set the scene, it was at Soldier Field in Chicago, and it was an especially windy day in the Windy City. It was gusting out there. There was stuff flying around. The players were braving through it. 3-3. Dying moments of the match, and Kellen Acosta he's around midfield, and he just hits it skyward, and he is not shooting the ball. He's just trying to put it into the mixer and make something happen. And as the ball went airborne, the wind just picked it up and it didn't stop. And the goalkeeper for CF Montreal, I think he thought that he had it lined up, and it just kept sailing.
Yeah.
Like I've never seen a ball like take flight like that.
It looked like the Jubilani in the World Cup in South Africa. You know how that ball would like, you could knuckle it and it would just like, it would just take a left turn in the middle of the air. It looked exactly like that. It was crazy.
Woo. And anyway, yeah, the goalkeeper couldn't line it up, and it goes over his head and somehow goes in for a stoppage time game winner for the Chicago Fire. Kellen Acosta, I mean, he wasn't trying to do that, but like, that's gotta be, I mean, it's gotta be some sort of psychological weight for that team, given the amount of leads that they have choked over the last 3 or 4 years. I don't think they care that it was wind assisted. But anyway, if you haven't seen that highlight, you gotta go check it out, because I don't think I've ever seen a goal quite like it. I've seen Like, there's the famous goal that, remember the one Tim Howard scored for?
Yeah.
So kind of similar to that. But like, that almost makes more sense to me because like, he's kicking it so much further. Like, I don't like, so like this one, it just, I don't know. It felt like the wind just took it so fast and so far.
Yeah.
So good job to the Chicago Fire. Big win for them. They were about to lose to CF Montreal, who are, they've been playing surprisingly well, and they probably, they should have won this game if they hadn't pulled the Chicago Fire against the Chicago Fire.
They drank too much of that Green River water.
They got, and, they got the Chicago Fire in them in Chicago. So unfortunate for CF Montreal, but good job to the Chicago Fire.
And the best bit about that, it comes off of last week, the Fire playing the Crew and losing in the 90 plus 10.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. Like, they've been doing that. They're probably going to go back to it next week, but for now, we'll give him the dub. Minnesota United, cooking with gas, man. I'm telling you,
man.
Cooking with gas. Their new coach, Eric Ramsey, I think we were talking about it on the show last week.
You were saying that they should have kept the assistant. Or the, was or the interim. Interim, yeah.
Well, I'd like to amend that take. I think I did say that. Well, I did Eric Ramsey's Zoom presser, his intro presser, and I was like, all right, I'm pretty impressed. I mean, this guy's 32, so he's like, he's a year older than me, and he was already an assistant for Manchester United, one of the biggest clubs in the world, and his presser, it seemed like he handled the media really well. He speaks a few different languages. He was answering questions in Spanish and stuff. I'm like, okay, all right, and you know, just listening to his answers, I'm like, okay, this guy, I can see why he's considered sort of like, I don't know if prodigy is the right word, but definitely like a hot up and coming young coach.
You could say hot again.
Globally. Yeah. Good looking dude.
Yeah.
But being an assistant for Man U, like that doesn't happen at age 32 by accident. So, I think the Loons might've pulled one here. They might've got a good one. And in his first game, 2-0 over LAFC, who we're going to talk about in the other section again. But I don't know. This might be the best team in the West right now, Minnesota United. Like, their vibes are pretty immaculate. They were cooking even before they got their coach. And now that they got this guy in who really seems like he knows what he's doing, he's a good young coach. If I had to peg an early front runner in the West, I think they would have to be up there. They'd have to be up there.
Do you think that they're better than Portland?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think Portland's had a really good start. They lost to
Broadwatch.
They lost to who did they lose to?
Portland lost to probably someone bad. Honestly, it's Portland Timbers.
They lost away at Houston, which is not like the worst L of all time. And they played, I remember now, they played pretty well in the game. But that was kind of a little bump in the road for them, whereas Minnesota United really hasn't had that yet. So yeah, I'm probably taking Minnesota over Portland right now. Inter Miami. So 3-1 at DC United, which DC United still TBD, like how impressive a win that is. But they didn't have Messi in this game, and Luis Suarez was dominant. He scored a really nice brace. And I think my main takeaway from that is just Inter Miami without Messi is still a force to be reckoned with. And unfortunately, contrary to some preseason narratives that were out there, I don't think Luis Suarez is particularly washed, if at all. Like, he's been scoring goals. Like, he has 6 goals, 5 assists across all comps, including Champions Cup so far this year. This is one of the best strikers of all time. I mean, on my KJR hit with Jackson today, I was talking about, you know, kind of where he ranks generationally. And he said I was ranking him too high. I don't really think so. I think, like, can you name, like if you're making a top 10 list of the best strikers of all time, is there any way that Suarez could be off that list?
No, I mean, I think including everything in his career, I don't know I don't really know who else you're saying, bumping him for.
I was like, saying top five, like, and yeah. I stand by that. But like, I think it's kind of, some might have forgotten the pedigree that we're talking about here, given the fact that, you know, he is 37 and there was a lot out there regarding the condition of his knees in the preseason.
They were jello.
Yeah, they were jello. And I think
they've solidified.
For the Inter Miami detractors out there, the hope was that he would be washed. And I mean, 11 goal contributions so far this season. Jesus Christ. And like, even so, they went away at DC.
Who was undefeated.
Who was undefeated and waxed him pretty good with no Messi. So,
and not to like undercut it either. Like, they have Campana, who had a stellar game.
Yeah.
Campana was easily the man of the match. He scored and assisted.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's Suarez coming off the bench.
I think it's
disgusting. And Bob T.
We haven't even got to Bob T.
Deepest squad in MLS? Ever?
Probably ever. Like, I've never seen a roster like this one. So, I mean, we'll see what happens with Messi, because he's working his way back from injury right now. But like,
he's a sounder.
This team at full strength is just ridiculous.
It is really nice of Messi to have basically just copy Pedro de la Vega to inspire the youth to get back and get better soon.
Yeah,
exactly. So I appreciate Messi for doing that. Always knew he was a good guy.
Honorable mentions. I'll shout out the Columbus Crew, 3-0 over the Red Bulls. They ripped him apart. I mean, Inter Miami is the best team in the league right now, but like, Columbus still has a claim right up there as the 1B. Like,
They're tactically the best.
You know what? They remind me. Inter Miami is like on this like kind of different level than I've seen in MLS. But what Columbus reminds me of right now is the peak dominant LAFC teams, like the 2019 team that put up the like plus 48, or like even when the same year when the Philly Union put up a really crooked number like that. Like, I think you could see something like that with Columbus. They have that like that vibe about them where like when they're going in attack, like, it looks like they're playing at a different speed. And Cucho Hernandez, like, MVP candidate, like, he does it every single week. And he had a really sick goal in this game. And then also he had a really nice assist on a Jason Russell Rose goal. So the crew looked pretty dominant. Like, if I had to pick a team that could maybe take down Inter Miami, probably going with the Crew.
And man, tactically, Nancy Ball is
best coach in the league. He's the best coach in the league right now, in my opinion. New York City FC got their first win of the season. That was kind of the team where I was like, you know, Seattle's really struggling on offense, but you know, there's some other good teams out there that are too. New York City FC, they hadn't scored a goal from open play either. They have now. They beat Toronto, who no one thinks is any good, but they've been playing, and we've been talking about how Toronto's been playing pretty well.
We've been up on Toronto for sure.
Yeah, we've been up on Toronto. So good dub for NYCFC.
What do you think NYCFC's problem is? Do you think, because they were opining on it on the MLS broadcast, that maybe they've gotten too many young pieces and there's not any like consistency. Do you agree with that?
Well, that's what I was going to say is, They've built a lot of their roster around like U22 signings and trying to like really use that mechanism. And it's just like, that's, you got to be really on it to make sure that those hit. Like, the hit rate on those is just so, like, there's so much variance. Like, you have no idea if these young players are going to translate, or like, you know, if you're relying on them to be like carry the load for my whole attack, like NYCFC is done with a couple of these guys. You can have all the confidence in the world in how you scouted him, but you just really, like, it's a very inexact science. So if I had to like theorize on it, I would say that they might have fallen prey to that a little bit, where, you know, a lot of these young players they've signed, like, seems like they're really talented and they have a lot of upside, but it's like, you know, are you ready to carry the load for an MLS attack? Maybe not as ready as they thought.
I think that's interesting, because I was thinking about it for my own view on like how I would like the Sounders to restructure things. And it's like, got to remember that and like look at NYCFC and the way that they've done things, and how are the Sounders going to balance their next generation with their current roster.
It's something to keep in mind. with De La Vega, you know? Like, I feel like his pedigree and what I've seen, you know, just from watching the highlights and stuff that I've watched, like, I think there's a good chance that the signing is going to hit, but it's definitely not a guarantee. And, like, you can see an example in some of the pitfalls with it on the same team with Leo Chu, where, like, he was a very highly rated prospect in Brazil, and, like, a lot of people thought that Seattle pulled, like, kind of a exploited kind of a market inefficiency, like, considering how highly rated he was. And there was a time last year where it actually looked like it was hitting, and then he was starting to break out. I touted him during that time period, but then, like, it hasn't been consistent, and he hasn't been, like, a carry the load in the attack type player. So it's just the U22 thing is fun, but it can be tough to rely on, you know? Like, I think a lot of teams have found that out. But, you know, there's also been hits too. So you just never know. Did you happen to watch Galaxy versus St. Louis City SC? Because that was the game of the week, in my opinion.
I didn't, unfortunately. Okay, no.
So 3-3 draw, crazy game, like goals flying back and forth. I have a few takes on this. First of all, Joseph Paintsill, man. Joey Paints. I'm telling you. This guy is a problem. He's a problem. It's like if Leo Chu had consistent end product. That's like what it's like watching. Like, he's got pace for days, and he's a very creative player, goal dangerous. He scored a goal in this game. Really good wide service. Just like a complete, fast, physical winger, man. Joey Paints, like, that looks like a hit. And I jinxed the Galaxy in this game. I said that the LA Galaxy were back, and in the MLS Slack channel. And they ended up remembering that they were the LA Galaxy, and they gave up an insane bicycle kick goal, and there's an 88th minute own goal where their goalkeeper John McCarthy essentially, he didn't like head it into his own net, but it definitely bounced off his head and into his own goal on a free kick into the box. But like, I still kind of stand by how I felt watching the Galaxy in that game. Well, the first emotion I felt watching the Galaxy play offense in that game was, damn, I wish the Seattle Sounders could play offense like this. God damn.
I feel like that constantly. I'm like, why do I have to sit here and watch the most boring, inefficient, stupidly crafted offense of all time? And then I flip the channel to the LA fucking Galaxy, and they're cooking. Just cooking.
Yeah, I mean, the Galaxy, they had their moments on offense last year, but they didn't have these wingers that they have now that really, I mean, it's pretty electric at times. Their problem still, though, is that, I mean, it's kind of chaos ball, because their defense is, unfortunately, does not seem to be fixed, which that was Greg Vanney's whole thing. He's like, I'm going to get these wingers. I'm going to fix the defense. Team's going to be really lit. They're playing some of the best attacking soccer in the league right now, for sure. But like, this game was an example where it's like, you got St. Louis City at home, and you're just every time you go ahead, you let them score the equalizer because you're still the LA Galaxy. But they're fun to watch. Like, Jovalich is one of the most efficient number nines in the league right now. Joey Paints is disgusting.
Yeah, he's nasty.
If the Galaxy could just like defend at a league average level, like, they would be for real. They just can't seem to do that. But they're like, definitely, like, if you're looking for a fun team to watch play offense, like, the Galaxy, like, I was having a blast watching that game. Let's get on to the losers from this slate, and then we'll get out of here, unless you have anything else.
No, let's do it.
Seattle Sounders, unfortunately, 1-1 draw at home against the Colorado Rapids. No goals from open play.
Just boring. They're uninspired.
2 points from two home games against Austin FC and the Colorado Rapids, who are, I don't think either of which are going to be playoff teams this year. I mean, that's just tough.
It's embarrassing, Ari. It is. I feel embarrassed to go to take my family to these games and have to have them watch this disgusting product.
The reason I wouldn't go that far is because, like, there's only so hype that I'm going to get my expectations when you're missing as many players as they are. And that's not like to make an excuse. It's more just like, I don't find it like shocking or embarrassing that there would be these types of struggles given where they're at with personnel. Like, I just don't. Yeah. It would be embarrassing to me if JP and Rusnak and De La Vega were out there and it still looked like this. That would be embarrassing. But like when you're talking about like half the team playing out there, like, I don't know, me personally, it's just,
I'm still embarrassed. I'm still tired of this Leo Chu new who like black hole of a side, and this Raul is amazing and like playing his ass off, and then it's like, okay, let's take that away by sticking Jordan at the double nine, but also like let's just have everyone mush around in the front the final third for no reason. It's like there's like, I don't know if Brian, like, I don't know, did I don't know, I don't want to speculate, you know, but like, what's Brian doing, you know, what's going on in that?
I didn't mean to turn this into another bag on Seattle segment. I'll lock it in. Like, I mean, I don't like putting them in this section, but like the reality is like two home games against Austin and Colorado, and you took 2 points from it and scored one goal. That's not good. Orlando City looks really bad. They got bammed on 2-0 by Atlanta United in their rivalry game. Who Atlanta United could have gone in the winner's section. They're playing really well right now. That's another team that...
Giacomakis
is... him and Jovalich, they're probably my favorite number nines in the league right now. Those two, just in terms of just the types of goals they score. Like, fun to watch. But Orlando City, it's just like surprising to see them like this. They already bombed out a Champions Cup, and this was a team that put up like 60 plus points and came in second supporter shield last year, and they brought like most of the same squad back, added Nico Ladero. I don't know. I'm a little surprised to see them down so bad. And I would say that I would bet on them turning it around, but it's notable nonetheless. Like,
yeah,
if they keep playing this poorly, like, the Heat might turn up on Oscar Perea.
Don't worry, they get to go bam on Austin next week, so they'll be fine.
That's a good get right game for them.
Yeah.
And finally, LAFC
brings us no joy to talk about them in this section, that's for sure.
Lobbing Scorcher is not a popular podcast among the LAFC fan base, unfortunately, but 2-0 loss at Minnesota, wasn't even snowing. Not good.
What's the excuse?
I don't know. They look like the Seattle Sounders on offense right now. Yeah. They had a scoreless streak that was longer than Seattle's, and they got shut out in this game and their last game, I think, you know. And you know, like we have a lot of fun here at the expense of LAFC struggles at the times that they do struggle, which hasn't been that much in the last couple of years. They've been the best team in the league for most of the time the last 2 years. But I do find it interesting that, you know, no Carlos Vela and Dennis Bouanga hasn't scored this year. Like, something might be up. Something might be up. Their fans, I keep track on of LAFC Twitter when they're playing poorly, because I think it's funny, and like they're not happy.
No,
like they're not happy with Chirundolo. They're not happy with how their offense. Like, they're talking about LAFC like the way that we talk about Seattle. Like,
which is really weird for delusional LAFC fans who think that they're the best thing since like sliced bread.
But that's the thing, though. They're not even like delusional about it anymore. Like, I think they know what's up.
They took the pill and they're like, oh shit.
They've like seen the light. Which you know, we joke. I don't know. Kind of similar to what I was saying about Orlando, but like if I had to bet on it, I'd probably place my bet that they turn it around to an extent. I think Bouanga is too good a player. He's not going to like go scoreless every week, is he?
Yeah.
Is he?
I don't know. I mean, send him to Seattle and we can find out.
I hope not for their sake, but, it's definitely, They're not on full on fraud watch, but they're on like preemptive fraud watch. And, yeah. You know, if any of the LAFC fans that aren't fans of us are listening to this, like just know you're on preemptive fraud watch. And like, if it becomes full on fraud watch, like I'm going to talk about that and enjoy that. You know,
it will be unrelenting.
Like I have to watch the Seattle Sounders play offense every week. So I have to like find things to enjoy in life. Yeah. And if that's LAFC struggling, like,
yeah, no, the Sounders are on fraud watch too. They don't like, so, you know, it's, they can't really be upset. Yeah, well, they're not even fraudulent. Much. They are like, they're, you know what I mean? Like they've shown exactly who they are so far. So it's like, you know, only up from here.
Yeah. Anyway, I had to, anytime LAFC gets shut out and loses, they're going to be in that section. Sorry. That was all I had for winners and losers.
Ooh, I have one more loser.
Okay.
I have one more loser.
Hit me.
Pro and the replacement refs.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I just, what a terrible week of officiating. I mean, have you ever seen that many red cards in a week of MLS?
There was a lot of red card. It just feels like in general, there is not a lot of control of the games. There's unfortunately a lot of obvious missed calls. It's not good. Like anyone who's trying to spin it, like it's like the same or like it can go on like this. I just don't agree.
No, I don't agree either. I don't agree either. Pay your refs.
You got to pay them up.
Yeah.
Unless you got anything else, I think we can get out of here on that, Noah.
That's it. You know what?
San Jose Earthquakes up next. Seattle Sounders are going to need to score multiple goals in the game to lead the show. Thank you, everyone, as always, for tuning in. Really appreciate everyone who listens to these. Download, rate, subscribe, comment, all that stuff.
Share with Davon Jovalich.
Share with your friends, your parents. Appreciate you all. Until next time, we out.
Peace.